Good morning, everyone. Coming to you live from somewhere in the Middle East, it is Saturday morning's hottest streaming media political talk show, Inside the Eye, live with The Fedge.
If it was up to me, I'd dump the Israelis tomorrow.
Heck, did I just hear someone tell a standing member of Congress that if it were up to them, they would dump the Israelis tomorrow? Sounds like something you might hear right here on Inside the Eye Live.
The Fetch. What a man. Oh, my God. You have to listen to that show. He was brilliant. Absolutely. I didn't know he had gonads of steel like that and a mind like a frigging razor. I didn't realize he was so clear. He cut through this that cognitive dissonance that is going on in the whole Patriot music movement.
And now it's time for Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. There you go. That'll work. From Amman Jordan, this is The Fetch, and you are live Inside the Eye. Today's date is Saturday, April 8th, 2017, everybody. And a good Saturday morning to all of you listening in the United States and Canada, and a good afternoon to evening to all of you listening in European and Asian time zones. And, of course, wherever you are listening out there on the World Wide Web or our FM or micro FM broadcasting outlets, may all be well with you and yours. The weather here in Amman remains a bit on the cool side, with temperatures reaching only to 66 degrees in what was projected to be a high of 70 degrees. Winds have been a very brisk and refreshing 18 to 20 miles per hour out of the west, and that has certainly kept the real field temperatures down. However, as the winds have been a pretty sustained 15 miles per hour speed and above throughout the day, we've got quite a lot of blowing dust around, and sometimes you can actually taste it and feel it, and it's kind of in my nose, which has given me some sniffles and sneezes because I think it's dust in my nose. So I may sneeze a few times during the show here today. However, all in all, it has been a very refreshing day today for the most part, and the entire past week here in Amman. So it's been a great week here on vacation. Winds, though, tonight should be decreasing with the falling nighttime temperatures reaching down to around 5 miles per hour in the early hours before sunrise, before picking up again tomorrow. Temperatures throughout the useful part of the evening should get down to about 58 degrees, but once you factor in the wind, temperatures are a bit biting to be enjoying the outdoors. So after the show today, we are going to have a kind of like going away barbecue tonight, and that's going to be up on my roof, which is quite common for those of you who are fortunate enough to have a roof in Amman. But it's going to be cold up there. I'm going to have to put a sweater on if I'm really going to get up there and enjoy the barbecue. I think we've got about a couple fish already marinated and ready to go. So we're going to enjoy a nice fish dinner tonight as a going-away gift. It really has been quite an enjoyable week here in Jordan as I wrap up what is a brief stay before traveling back to Riyadh this week. In fact, I delayed my trip by a day, actually, to be able to broadcast out instead of my normal schedule, which is a getaway on a Saturday. Now, all of this juggling does make for a difficult travel schedule, as I will be arriving in Riyadh now early Tuesday morning, like after midnight. And with that, that's going to be a really short night before getting back to work on Tuesday. But really, no complaints on my part, everybody. It's been really a nice week, and I've really had a nice, relaxing time. I managed to get through 1 liter of scotch for the week and a couple beers. That's it. But it's been really nice, you know, just to sit back, relax, enjoy the cats, the gals, and the house, and just put my feet up and watch a little TV. Play on the Twitter, which, of course, I do all the time. You can follow me at Twitter at Radio ITEL. That's Twitter at Radio ITEL. I would like to send out a hearty thanks to Par Henriksen, who was here in Amman on some private business. He just happened to really be in Amman at the same time I was coming back. Now, Par is somebody who has coordinated a lot of the Inside the Eye Live activities up in Sweden with the Radio Nordfront people. which is the radio arm of the National Socialist Party up in Sweden. He was here on the show last week. He was actually sitting right next to me. And it's kind of strange because this guy's a camera buff and a video buff. He likes to take a lot of pictures. So he took so many gigabytes, close to, I think, 16 gigabits worth of photos and videos. And he was kind enough to come here as the day before he was leaving, leave a lot of that behind. So I've got a lot of cool pictures. And it's kind of a neat little look behind the scenes of Inside the Eye Live, if you like, because he was actually sitting here in my humble little studio while we broadcast last week. In fact, you can see the warm-up to the show, you know, basically the last 4 to 5 minutes before we go live on Inside the Eye Live, all the going on behind the scenes. And he videotaped that, and not taped it, but took a video of that. And that is up on the Inside the Eye Live YouTube account. So if you go to Inside the Eye Live on YouTube and check things, you know, just do a Google search. It's easy to find, or find the links through InsideTheEyeLive.com. You'll be able to see the fetch in like the last 4 to 5 minutes before going on air. And it's kind of cool. I got to admit, it's kind of a fun little inside thing going on. So it's kind of fun if you like the vets, you like the show. It might be a little fun for you to go just check out the video. That includes the first half hour of the show, by the way, everybody. So we put it into a little video format for you and put that up on the Inside the Eye Live YouTube page again. And you can follow all of my social media accounts by going to InsideTheEyeLive.com. That's right, InsideTheEyeLive.com. Up in the upper right-hand corner, up in the header section of the website, you will find all of my social media links. And feel free to email me, as a lot of you do. And we look forward to, of course, hearing from you or somehow meeting up out there in cyberspace. We have quite a guest lineup today as we get away here, so you're going to want to really get settled in for what should be 3 hours of intelligent media for the politically aware. In hour number two, which will be 11 o'clock a.m. Eastern, Monica Schaefer will be joining us from Canada. Monica is a very talented musician and quickly rose to notoriety with the release of a short video entitled "Sorry, Mom, I Was Wrong About the Holocaust." And she released that back in June of 2016. The result of that release has really resulted in a protracted assault on really everything about her personal and private life. And she's going to be coming on to talk about her experiences in dealing with Jewish fifth column elements and how they seek to go about silencing dissent out there on the web. It's not unique to the Fetch, everybody. It goes on everywhere, and their stories are everywhere. And eventually, we need you and you need us to speak up for each other so we can shout these people back down, because they will not back down. These people are like totalitarian, I don't even know the term. They're not bigots. They're totalitarian monsters, perhaps we could say. But I don't even know that's, you know, it is funny that mono and, you know, like monotheism and monster and money, they all kind of share the same roots, but that's another day. Then in hour number three, Michael Tom Goodrich, the author of Hellstorm, The Death of Nazi Germany, 1944 to 1947, will be joining us. And if we are able to get the Skype worked out or some type of phone feed, Mike will be joined by an author himself, although he says he's unpublished, but he's a big fan of the show, a big fan of history, big fan of getting the word out, I guess we could say. His name is Taylor McLean. So we're looking forward to having Taylor join us also here on Inside the Eye Live. Now, let's get the show kind of rolling, because we don't have a whole lot of time today. First thing is, join us in the chat room. It's not humming, but it's doing well. InsideTheEyeLive.com. That's right, InsideTheEyeLive.com. Click on the live chat button. And if I go through, I don't see any complaints in the chat room about the quality of the sound. We're in Amman, which means it's a lot nicer and easier to get out than it is from Riyadh. Trust on that by degrees of many degrees, a factor of 2 to 3 times perhaps even. So we are now in just my private studio here where we got the dedicated bandwidth and direct connect. We're able to get straight into the studio, so it's a lot nicer, to say the least. So, but you can join us there in the chat room, InsideTheEyeLive.com. Click on the live chat button. I want to send out a little feeler first to those of you who are within the Christian community. And this comes from run-ins with people in the Christian community. And we're not going to throw you a branch or anything. What we really want to say is this. When you look at the foundations of Western civilization, Christianity, we are not going to deny that Christianity played a heavy role in the development of Western civilization. To deny that or try to spin it in ways that denies that is really being dishonest and not pragmatic, to put the least. But there is also a hidden, mystical, secret society system in play that was always about raising up Western mankind, this idea of raising mankind above the waves. And you saw that in the early Freemasonic systems. I mean, when you look at these Gothic churches that were built, those weren't built by, quote unquote, the Christians, everybody. These were built by those who were practicing a form of esoteric science that became known as Freemasonry. And a lot of people say that Freemasonry is evil, Freemasonry is this, and even I think Blackbird would say that it's somewhat of a top-down control infrastructure. And I can get that. I understand that. But at the same time, when you're dealing with specific types of knowledge sets, it's very difficult to transmit these knowledge sets. And our Western system has these transmissions embedded throughout our system. And those of us who have dedicated a good portion of our lives to understanding this system, you know, we're not anti-Christian, but we understand there's something very big at play on this planet and perhaps even the universe. And so we caution you, look, we're not your enemy. Our enemy remains this globalist Jehovahian, you can call it satanic if you'd like, but this globalist Jewish Jehovahian system. And much of it is rooted essentially in what you could call Abrahamism. And it's very interesting about the word Abrahamism. Because if I take the word Abraham and I make it backwards, it becomes marhaba, basically. And marhaba means welcome in the Middle East. So it makes you wonder if the negative of welcome, which is then Abraham, is essentially something that's not welcome at all. And we are not your enemies. We understand how our mysteries are embedded into the Christian faith, how our systems are embedded pretty much throughout the entire world. But I've been finding recently Christians out there making some types of attacks on yours truly, what we've been teaching, what we've been explaining. And I find it, quite honestly, counterproductive. We've never been anti-Christian here. We understand that lots of crimes have been committed in the name of Christianity. But a lot of us are very, very tuned in to this idea of this Jehovahian Jewish element that is embedded within these systems. And for a lot of us, we need to recognize that this mixture, and they call it in the occult or the metaphysical world, this admixture of good with evil, is just the way the universe works. There is, in other words, it's just the way it is, everybody. And it's for us to be able to develop our deductive reasoning, our intuitive reasoning, our emotion, our sense of awareness, such that we are able to penetrate and pierce through and isolate this negative element so that we can purify things. And that is where we need to keep this discussion. Look, there's no reason to be against me. If you think I'm some crypto kike Jew, as some people like to call me out there, boy, you really need to guess again. because you have no clue, because the sacred mystical arts have been literally chased and destroyed since before Christianity ever came into being. And to those of us who recognize these arts, we understand that if you go to Isaiah 65, if you want to be into quoting your scripture and all of that fun stuff, and I don't have a problem with it, but if you go to that Isaiah 65, you have this little chapter or this little paragraph that says, you know, those of you who worship the God of good luck, or it might be translated as the God of the God Gad or something, cursed are you, and we will spite you and kill you and cut your heads off and that. Look, that's been going on for thousands upon thousands of years. You can go back to the Mahabharata and you see it. You can go back to many ancient texts. And you will see this. So understand clearly, we who are part of this element that is within the esoteric traditions of the West, just because we have information or knowledge that you can't grasp yet, or you don't understand, or you don't even want to know, doesn't mean we are with the Jews. Because they are this planet's eternal enemy. It has been this way since Aramaeus was admixtured with inside the egg, as they like to say. In other words, this is a battle not just for today, but this is a battle for the human spirit itself. And we all recognize that. We ask that some of you who are taking assaults and pop shots back off a little bit. You don't need to create enemies. First of all, you don't get the Kabbalah of the Jews. You're not that, with all due respect, most of you are not that sophisticated. You don't grasp what is going on. You are part of this greater team that everybody needs. But this Kabbalah of the Jews is very complicated. It's very sophisticated. If you go back to the 1600s, you will find that there were a lot of Christian Kabbalists, and they despised the rabbinical Kabbalah schools. So please, my only thing is take a step back. Don't try to figure things out so quickly. It's not as easy as you think. The world is not as cut and dry as you think. It's not just black and white. There are tons of grays, shades out there, and colors and admixtures going on. And that really takes us up to the main story here. And that is that Washington itself, the city of Washington, D.C., and for that matter, you could probably take into account every single capital where governments are centered. These are complicated realms. They're complicated environments. And just yesterday, the Twitter blew up with Donald Trump, apparently, getting all misty-eyed about some supposed gas attack in Syria. And he goes and blows $49,088,000 by shooting off 59 Tomahawks that the Russians say only about 23 actually hit any targets inside of the airbase. Well, we have to ask ourselves, you know, is Donald stupid? Is he naive? Is he controlled? So you're going to get all of these conspiracy theories now floating around Washington and the Twitter world about essentially Donald Trump singing the praises of Torah, 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 and launching a sneak attack against Syria. That's how it's kind of being played out in the media, this attack yesterday by the United States on a sovereign nation, which is a war crime. Without a doubt, you cannot just go attack a sovereign nation, everybody. That's a war crime. He doesn't have authority to launch this type of attack against a sovereign nation. I don't care about this idea of, oh, we need to save the children because of the gas and it's horrible. Give us a break already, Donald. I know Washington is a very complicated environment. Really, I understand it. I've never been there, but I get it. It's very complicated. There are so many competing forces going on in there, and all of them essentially just want to feed at the teat of the public treasury. We get that. But come on, you know, you talk so much common sense, Mr. Trump, about how the fake news is an enemy of the American people. And the second they feed you this parade of sad pictures about some supposed gas attack, you like lose all sense of rationality and you launch, what, 59 cruise missiles against Syria. Now, I'm one of these guys that believes that Trump isn't that stupid. But, you know, we look at the Trump administration right now. Nepotism is a very dangerous element to inject into a government administration. And the reasons for that are really quite simple. You know, if I have somebody who is working for me and I'm the head of a government and he's working for me, it's not very difficult for me to just tell him, hey, screw you, get the hell out, you're fired. I want your resignation tomorrow. But when you put in someone like a fifth columnist like Jared Kushner and your daughter, Ivanka, and these people are now trying to run the foreign policy as it's being purported in many of the news articles out there, it's very difficult to tell your son-in-law, hey, get the hell out of here, you're fired, because you still got to deal with them at dinner over the next dinner, family dinner. Nepotism is a very dangerous precedent that we see developing within the Trump administration. Since when is it that you've got Jared Kushner, who's really a nobody, everybody? This guy's a nobody. Look, he doesn't have the age. He does, with all due respect, he doesn't have the age. He doesn't have the experience. What the hell can this guy know to really make a difference here in the Middle East, for one? Calling us from the 704 area code. Hi, welcome and good morning to Inside the Ant Life.
Hey, Fetch, I realize you don't have much time, but I just had to say, that's the first thing I thought of the next morning was, you know, Trump is now a war criminal. And I thought, you know, it's kind of, could it be like a gang initiation or a mafia where, you know, you have to kill somebody or rob someone, you know, before, you know, you're a made man. And now they've got him. Now they own him because he's criminal.
Yeah, he's criminal now. I mean, no doubt about it. He's a
criminal on the world scene. Everyone knows now that he's a criminal. Everyone knows he had no evidence to back up, to justify legally what he did.
Yeah, I mean, why he did that again? I've called it many times, as you know, because you listen to the show, that the guy appears to me, because I don't know him personally, guys, so he appears to me to be exceedingly naive when it comes to geopolitics. The guy's a neophyte. He doesn't really know. This is just by reading his face, the way he talks, trying to read through his comments. The guy doesn't get it. That's just my take on him. Now, people can say, no, Fetch, this guy's a bought and paid for Jewish mafia front man, and you just don't understand. I think that's a little simplistic equally. But, yeah, he's a criminal now. I mean, the bottom line is, why in the hell would you sully your spirit after doing so much good? He's built a huge amount of goodwill for a lot of families out there through the jobs he's created. And why would you want to throw that away by some stupid-ass story about gassing kids, you know, that only Jews masturbate? You know, Jews are the ones that, like, salivate at this idea of gassing people all the time.
Okay, Fetch, I'll get out of your way. Thanks.
All right, thanks. Well, that's Frank, everybody. Okay. But, yeah, I agree with Frank. That was a criminal act. But, you know, again, to me, I don't care about, you know, this idea of doing something just to do something, as Trump's trying to say in Jewish communities, Jewish leaders and the Jewish community is trying to tell us. These guys seem to think that two wrongs make a right. So, okay, if, and that's like an if that's bigger than my wall here, that Bashar al-Assad was actually behind these gas attacks, then still, we don't have the right to just unilaterally go in and bomb things. And I've been thinking about this event in Syria a little bit, because I've been watching it, and although I'm not for it, I know Washington's a very complicated environment. And this attack has done a couple things. It's really energized the America First group, that you could count people like us, the nationalists. Nobody in the nationalist community that understands what's really going on wants to support Israel. Israel is our enemy. They were behind the USS Liberty bombing, the Lavin affair, the Beirut barracks, 9/11. These guys are not our friends. They are the enemies not just of the United States, but of Western civilization. And they have been that way for thousands of years. And the only reason Israel was even thought of being created was because Western leaders understood that the Jewish community as a political bloc were enemies of Western civilization. Israel was meant to solve this idea of the fight and the battle between Jews and the non-Jewish communities out there. And all we really did was we gave them Israel, but we got nothing in return. It's not like they left. It's not like they abandoned the media. It's not like they abandoned finance. It's not like they abandoned their political machinations. So they got something, and we got nothing in return. Now you've got people like Bill Kristol, the neocon, Bill Kristol, and he's out there saying something very disturbing, quite frankly. And I tweeted it back to Donald Trump directly. Well, I'll get into this after the break. We got a few things coming up after the break. It's The Fetch, Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. Back. Oh. All right, welcome back, everybody. It's The Fetch, Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. The gentleman's been waiting on the line a little bit, so we're going to bring him on right now from the 831 area code. Welcome to Inside the Eye Live.
Yes, hello, Fetch. Thank you. Long time, first time. I'm doing great. Thank you very much. A long time, first time listener, and
talking. I got to keep, I plugged you off. Hold on a second.
Okay,
go ahead. I'm sorry. I actually potted you down. How are you, and good morning?
Yes, sir. Once again, long-time, first-time listener. I, too, am from Southern California like yourself. Grew up in Long Beach.
How cool is that? You know what I loved about Long Beach? I lived in Long Beach.
Really?
For like one summer, you know, right off the beach, man, right off the Pacific Coast Highway, Ocean Boulevard.
Yes.
You know Ocean Boulevard, man.
And, of course.
You know, used to walk across. You had the convention center across the way in in that area, not too far from the train station. So I love Long Beach. It's a great little town. At least part.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you. I still go there to see, unfortunately, God bless an aunt who has advanced Alzheimer's, but it hasn't changed much.
Which is great. So basically the west side sucks and the east side is pretty darn good.
You know, that's true. One more thing about Long Beach, one more data point. You know, it's always the same. I live on the east side, which is the nice part by the golf course. But if you cross the train tracks, you're on the west side. Look out. Lock your doors.
Yeah. And you know what? I used Long Beach. It was like my home golf course for a while. I was there like every day.
Yeah, recreation golf course. I grew up right by there. I know all about it.
Yeah, that was my home golf course because it was easy. It wasn't so hard. I could at least get my scores decent.
Awesome. Hey, I just wanted to make a quick comment, and I think you and everybody else, take no offense to this, is going down the wrong rabbit hole. Now, I say this because I myself am in the aviation profession. I believe personally that this was well executed. This is a false flag on top of a false flag. And if you recall correctly, there was scant data regarding an Israeli F-15 being shot down on 3/21. And then on 3/22, Skull and Bones Day, 3/22, we had that fake, just like the fake Boston bombing. They always create another false flag. We had the British bombing, that fake bombing. My view, my opinion, is that they took the S-300s, which were based there. They didn't have the S-400s at that base yet in eastern Syria. And they shot down an Israeli F-15. They covered it up, and this was payback. And they pre-positioned those Aegis-class boats, and this was all set up, and then they created the fake gas attack, and this was payback because, as you know and I know as well, and I'll let you know, my middle name is Wolfgang, so I'm very adept to the whole Jewish cabal, and I say the Khazarian Jews that surround Trump, including Jared Subway Kushner, these were the people behind that, you know, because he's simply a Mossad agent. He is a de facto Mossad agent influencing Trump, and I think that's what went on.
Well, that's an interesting take. I was also leaning towards the false flag upon a false flag also. I was going to get that more since, you know, in this next half hour about the... So I brought up the idea of Washington's a complicated environment. That was the setup, the segue to go into this possible false flag. Because, you know, you're talking about a lot of missiles that were launched and didn't make it. Where'd those missiles go as an...
Well, I think they did have the design. I don't think they want to start World War III. I just think Trump, has been threatened. I think simply they said, hey, we're going to take the darkened, tinted window SUV and we're going to T-bone some of your extended family. Or we're going to take the CIA created 25 years ago a bazooka gun and shoot a resonance frequency at somebody at 1,000 meters and take them out, much like they did Stanley Myers back in the day. That's what they killed him with when he created that H2O dune buggy, if you recall, back in the early 90s.
Yes.
My point is that in the case of Trump, I also think my personal opinion is they've targeted his DNA with a satellite. And I think NSA has had this technology for 20 plus years. And they are using a soft sort of targeted individual approach towards him, and they're hitting him with resonance frequency waves to mind alter and mind control him passively. I think that's what they're doing. I think they're targeting him because remember, elements of the deep state. You and I know this are still these carryover pieces of garbage from that are in mostly the State Department. From what I can see, I never knew it was so deep. On the seventh floor, NSA, CIA elements, mostly CIA, because you had that shootout in downtown, Manhattan with that building with the NSA, where the CIA and the NSA were shooting it out, and that didn't get much coverage. But I think that mostly CIA and State Department and the selected pedophile politicians, those are the ones that are really... taking him down, and I think they have the technology to scramble his brain, and I think they've threatened his life.
He did come off as really confused. It's like, dude, how did you change 180 degrees?
Yeah,
over a
I get smacked myself. We have a conversation someday, my friend. Back in the late 90s, I worked with elements of the U.S. Naval Secret Space Program who were in that program flying the TR-3B, which is another conversation for another day. But my point is, I myself have been smacked with this. I've had a lot of weird things. I've had my tires slashed on my car, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, they have this technology. That's all I wanted to point out.
This is how stupid they are, too. They're not the brightest people, but, when you don't have the weapons to fight back, it's difficult. But they hit me so bad, they left 7 diamond shapes right over my heart.
Ooh.
The welts were so big. It was probably an eighth of an inch. The welts were like an eighth of an inch, the skin welted up over an eighth of an inch.
Wow.
And it lasted like 9 months before they finally went away. And when I went to the doctor, they said, well, maybe you put an iron on your chest because I wanted to document it, And and you could just tell the doctors are like, they didn't want any part of this, man. We don't want any, dude. Maybe.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. There's one more data point to feed into the doctor not wanting to look at that. And that is that parasites, same thing. If you have any live parasites, worms, and I know I'm going to go out there on this data, this is a fact. You can go on YouTube and look this up. there are many, many females who have been targeted as targeted individuals, and they put these alien-like entities into their stomach. And when you take a sonogram or a picture, ultrasound, you see this thing in their stomach that looks like it's from another planet. And basically, I think they're caught up in this whole targeted individual thing. And I myself, when I went in and had a parasite problem, I went to 5 different doctors, and I went to a specialist, I'll say it, at Stanford University. And this woman was the infectious disease specialist. And I said, look, I have this disease. I've seen it. And I took several biopsies, blood tests, et cetera, and it would always come back negative. And this woman said to me, quote unquote, you have paratosis. And it's in your head, and we're going to have to put you on a psychotropic drug. And I laughed at her. I said, you're crazy. You're crazier than me. Yeah, and this is what they want to do.
That's funny. I had the same type of things. I would go in and I would tell them, look, this is what's going on. This is what they're doing. And the doctors would talk to me, and they would come up with some outlandish, bizarre things. You need to do the same
yes.
psychotropics. I says, you know what, dude? I said, you're not even living through this. I'm bringing you information as part of a you are licensed by the state. It's your responsibility to take these damn reports and not cast judgment on them. Take the report
yes.
first and let us then deal with the facts once we get the reports down. I said, we can't go to the police, to anybody, without a report from you. We just want a freaking report at this stage. We don't want you.
They're all part of the scam. They're all part of the scam now. They've been bought off, as you and I know, by the major medical weaponized industrial complex pushing drugs.
It's
and you know, they're just drug pushers now.
Yeah, it's a huge conspiracy for sure.
Yes, but I'm on the same page with the Fetch. As a long time, first time, caller.
Great to have you.
I am so sick of this tribal control. One more thing. I'm not going to say which country it is, but I have a second passport through my ex-wife in a southern country in South America. Starts with a B, ends with an L. And I tell you, every time I fly down there, every 2 to 3 years, I see El Al pull in. And you look at their airplanes, they're painted like a war airplane. They've got the Synagogue of Satan star on the tail. It's kind of a light gray, like it's painted like a U.S. Navy or U.S. Air Force airplane, so it can't be shot down. And, you know, I remember about 3 years ago when I was down there in southern Brazil, I saw all these knucklehead Hasidic Jews getting up, oi vey, oi vey, oi vey, oi vey. And they all have their little shaved heads and their curly hair, you know, kind of like quasi Amish looking. And what are they doing? They're down there just like in Antwerp doing the diamond trade. You know, they've got that whole scam going on globally. They were all coming down with their diamonds, you know, with that whole fleeced fake. No, there is no diamond shortage, as we know. It's all created by them so they can make money. And, so the whole cabal group of Hasidic Jews were down there getting off the plane. I witnessed this. Probably 1/3 of the airplane, diamond brokers.
Mm, amazing. Fun story.
Yeah.
You'll have to call back another time when the motivation gets you. It's great to have you and great to have someone from the Southern California area. I kind of miss the area. You know,
it's totally rad, man. Totally rad, dude.
Rad. There you go. I haven't heard that word since I came to the Middle East. You know, the weather here with the breeze, you know, we get this nice, we're 3,300 feet in the air and you get these breezes in the mornings. And it's very brisk and cool. And I swear it reminds me of like being on the beach at Huntington Beach, like 9 in the morning, you know, 10 in the morning, where it's still not heat. The sun hasn't warmed it up yet. It's kind of brisk, or the sun's setting. You get that breeze coming off the ocean. And it just reminds me of home. I'm like, man, this is so surrealistic. I'm so far from home, but I feel like the air is my home. So it's really kind of.
Yeah, you're lucky. You're lucky. One more thing. I lived that real quick side note. I lived in KSA in the sandbox in Jeddah for a year. I was a contract pilot there. And let me tell you, as an infidel, non-believer, you know, I'd fly into a Medina, couldn't get off the airplane. Oh, no, you're not allowed outside the airport. You're not Muslim.
Yep.
And I just recall this real quickly.
You follow my story then. You actually know what I'm talking about.
Oh, of course. Of course. I was there, buddy. I was there for a year, and I never went to Chop Chop Square. I couldn't stomach it. I had many a European compatriot fellow workers say, oh, it's going to chop. I'm like, are you kidding me? I don't want to see somebody get their head chopped off.
Yeah. You know, I've had people describe, you know, what it looks like, and I said, I don't need to be partaking of that. But, you know, I spent a lot of time with the RSAF, you know, RSAF, I'm sure, that statement there. And they love me.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they love me because I'm one of their better. For a number of years, I was, like, developing some of their English training programs. They just liked my style, my technique. So I was, but we lost the contract. And they asked me to come back under a different company. And I said, thanks, but I'd rather have the time off. You know, because if I was there now, I'd still be in Saudi with them, and I couldn't come home to Amman like I do now.
I think you're in a better place. I think Amman, Jordan, I've only been to the airport, but that's a lot of beautiful women there.
Dude, you know. Forget it. Forget the women here. Forget it. You know, Parr was here, and he got involved with some of the local ladies here. And basically he had to get rid of some of these problems. I said, dude, don't come to this part of the world. You know what I mean? Don't come here. It's not your world. It's not like you can figure out how to blend in here. Don't come. Just stay away. That's what I advised him, you know, because some people just don't get the complexity of these tribal nations. You know, they're not like we in the West.
You got to be open-minded, and you've got to be in a mindset where, you know, you know this as well as I do. You have to have the guest, quote-unquote, mentality. Hey, you're a guest there, and you need to treat it as such. You can't go there with a belligerent attitude. You won't last long.
Exactly. They'll railroad you out one way or the other.
Yeah, and it's hardcore, man. Saudi Arabia is no joke. It's the most fundamentalist country, wasabiest country on the planet. But I was there in the mid-90s. I don't know if it's changed
worse,
or not.
No. It was worse in the 90s. Back then, they were still teaching kill the kafirs, you know, back in the schools. And my theory is that King Abdullah stopped that around 2003, 2004. And so now all these Wahhabist rebels that you have running around the Middle East, this is basically everybody's way of killing these rebels off, because you had generations that believed this. And
nice.
The only way to kill these people off is to get them involved in a war and just start shooting them, because they're so idealistic. They'll believe it even to the death. So you basically are using, in other words, they had that gene pool here. They don't want it here because it's dangerous even to the ruling elite here. So, okay, let's export them. Let's arm them, give them a chance. We'll still be able to influence them if they win, but if not, no big loss. It's better than having them in our own countries. And unfortunately, Syria was one of the at the front line of this strategy.
Well, Syria, and we all know this, is a greater Israel destabilized. Israel, I've heard, I've never been there. I don't really want to go. It's a very unstable place, of course, with the shunting of the Palestinians, et cetera, et cetera. So, it's all about the oil. They want to run an oil pipeline through there. At the end of the day, that's my ultimate conviction of what they want to do. It's like a convenient place to run oil and gas pipelines through Syria. And I think
I'm hearing that there's unreported reserves of oil in Syria in the many billions and billions of barrels. And it's not reported in any mainstream media, but it is well known by certain factors. And people came to me with that recently, said, Fetch, come on, man, there's oil there, dude. And they know it, but it's not reported. They've kept it quiet.
Yeah, you know, and I also believe this, knowing what I know about the U.S. Naval Secret Space Program, they had a stargate in the oldest city in Iraq. It starts with an I. I can't think of the name of it. That was the first place they invaded and send in U.S. special forces. And I think Syria pretty much has many of those same elements. I'm sure that there's a lot of Sumerian, quote-unquote, hidden technology there that they'd like to get their hands on.
Yeah, and that's a side that a lot of people just haven't bought into. But I don't cover it here, as you know, but I do know that that exists. Come on, the Vimanas of India and what's going on in Afghanistan. These are all areas where a lot of this purported ancient secret technology would be located. And that seems to be a place where the U.S. has a very keen interest. And secret societies, as you know, have long spoken about this and talked about it. It's not a mistake.
Hey, yeah. Shameless plug, and I'll get off real quick. I just wanted to give you a shameless plug for a YouTube channel to go way, way out there, because you're on that same page as me regarding that. It doesn't have to do with what we're talking about today, but please kindly go to EXO-TV on YouTube, EXO-TV, Dr. Michael Sala. Very intelligent man, has written 8 books, located in Brisbane, Australia. And he has interviewed about a handful, 7 to be specific, of these people who worked on the Mars and other off-planet things. And my point is this. This is really the next layer of where the money is going. And it's been going there really since the early 70s. And that's all I want to say. And if people go to EXO-TV and look at Dr. Michael Sala's data, they will be. It's very, very interesting data. And I know it's a fact because I was told these data points back in 1998, 1999. That's all I wanted to point out.
Very cool. Your name one last time? First name?
Wolfgang. I tell you, if you go look up Oscar Zimmermann, Oscar Zimmermann was my grandfather. He was a famous Stuka SS pilot. You used to be able to find him on Wikipedia, but now we know that's a Jew-controlled operation out of Tel Aviv. Now I have to look extra hard. I have to go to the German Wikipedia page to find my grandfather there.
Wow. But, best teacher ever, who taught me a lot of how I think today, her last name was Zimmermann.
Yeah, he was a very famous SS Stuka pilot. I wasn't really that close to him. He passed on before I got very old. He died when I was 7 years old. But he was a pretty high up there, decorated guy. So yes, I'm very proud of my German heritage, and that's all I can tell you.
Very cool, man. Thanks, Wolfgang, for the call. What a great call, and thanks to hear somebody from my hometown area.
Yes, sir. Wiedersehen, and hey, dude. Keep it rad.
Very good. Thanks so much, Wolfgang. That's Wolfgang, everybody, from originally the Long Beach area. Great call, by the way. That was a fun little call. Again, this is listener-sponsored and supported radio. What it does mean is it relies upon your donations to help keep the network alive, up and running. And because of that, we really do rely upon, again, your donations. So please, what you can, work your way over to freedomslips.com if you appreciate what you hear on this show and support this show, because you know what? That's really your responsibility to help support the network, because it's this show. I'm not talking about the other shows, of course, but we certainly would appreciate that if you could help sponsor the show, you know, indirectly via the station. The ITOCAT Report is proudly sponsored by North Kakalaki Trading Post, good services and solutions for all creatures great and small. It's inconveniently located at the corner of Walk and Don't Walk and by Blackbird's Breakfast Club, Blackbird 9's Breakfast Club. It is a radio show hosted by Blackbird 9, a.k.a. Frederick C. Blackburn, an NSA whistleblower, 9/11 truth advocate, former 32-degree Mason, and a former North Carolina House candidate. You can hear Blackbird 9's Breakfast Club every Wednesday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. on Spreaker. That's 8 to 10 p.m. on Spreaker. For more information, visit blackbird9tradingpost.org. Cat Report, it's kind of brief here because we're running out of time. It's been fun. Guys, I've been here in Amman now for the week. I've enjoyed the cats for the week. You know, we've got a situation now. We've got this gray cat, Tabby. It comes out. There's like outside of my kitchen window, to the lower left, there's another roof from the house next door. That's the roof of the house. And this cat will sit there and it will just scream at you. Scream for like 5, 10, 20, 30 minutes, just screaming at you because it wants to be fed. So 3 days ago, we didn't feed it. That cat decided to make its way into my house. And you should have seen Bruiser just go on the warpath. He's snorting. He can't see a thing, because he's blind, but he smells it. He's snorting. He's like, he gets into this weird looking aggressive gait, and I'll tell you, it was quite a wild week, everybody. You'd have to see it to believe it. It's the Fetch Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. Back with more right after this.
Hello.
All right, everybody, welcome back. It's the Fetch, Inside the Eye, live intelligent media for the politically aware. And today, what is today? April the 8th, 2017, I believe it is. Something like that. So good morning to all of you listening in the United States and Canada. And, of course, time zones south of that. We got people calling left and right all over the place. It's getting hard to manage this screen here. Let's see, where were we? Before we get to our guest, and she is standing by, we just wanted to share a couple things with you real quick. We got a nice email from Yazigoth. He's through Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter, at Radio Itel. That's right, follow me on Twitter, at Radio Itel. And he says here, I enjoy your show a lot. He says, I listen to the podcast more often than live, but trying to get a schedule up and running which allow more live listening. I am somewhat of a newbie, as another favorite Blackbird 9 might say. I am an old ex-socialist who has made a slow, lonely transition from the left, starting with disenchantment over Israel's treatment of Palestinians. And he says quite a bit more, but guys, we have a lot of people converting over to having an awareness of what is going on out there. And that is no different from our next guest here. She is a talented musician, a violinist, and she has been a member of the Green Party. My cat's like screaming at me to let him outside. She says she's run in one provincial and three federal elections as a Green Party candidate between 2004 and 2011. That came to an abrupt end after she also became quite a bit more aware. Her name is Monica Schaefer. And without further ado, Monica, oh, I just want to say this. She really gained notoriety when she came up with a video called something like, I'm sorry, I had it on the screen and I lost it. Mom, I was wrong about the Holocaust, something like that. But nonetheless, Monica Schaefer, welcome to Inside the Eye Live.
Thank you so much. And you did get the title exactly right.
Thank goodness.
Yes, the 6-minute video is called Sorry, Mom, I Was Wrong About the Holocaust. And I put that out June 17th, 2016. So that's about 9 months ago, I believe. And it was quite a journey since then. And I've learned a lot of things. Like, for example, something I never really was aware of before, this concept of ritual defamation. Mm-hmm. I think I've become an expert on that. Yes, I live in a very small town, Jasper, Alberta, Canada. It's in the Rocky Mountains. It's in a national park. It's a little bit of a fairy tale town, you could say. It's just so beautiful here, and the community is you know, the people who live here, they work here, they play here. It's not like it's a bedroom commuter town for some place bigger nearby, because we really are not that close to any large city or anything like that. Yes, yeah, so when I came back to Jasper after producing that video, even before I returned to Jasper, I realized and understood that there was a very, very strong reaction. And it wasn't a surprise, of course. When I released that video, I knew that I had stepped through a door, being so public with my understanding of the history of World War II, which was very different from what I had believed all my life up until, you know, fairly recently. So, you know, it's only about 6 years ago, I would say, that I started to wake up to some of the major, major deceptions that we are being led to believe. And that started with my understanding of 9/11. And obviously, that was way past the actual event of 9/11. I just was pretty much asleep at the wheel until about 2011. And then I started to look into that, and it became very obvious very quickly that that was not how they had explained it to us on the mainstream media. And then it was a couple of years after that that the deeper deceptions started to become apparent to me. And lying was not invented in 2001. So World War II history, the most taboo subject of all, the Holocaust, that is really the most taboo subject. And I would say that the reaction that I've been receiving from my community and from further afield is, you could see it as an endorsement of what I am saying, what the message is, that the Holocaust did not happen the way they have described it to us. And I mean, World War II was a terrible, terrible time. Many, many, many people died, and many Jews died, many Germans died, many Americans died, Canadians died. A lot of people died. But was there a deliberate extermination in camps? There were work camps. There is no dispute about that.
Yeah, let's take us back a little bit so we get to know who Monica Schaefer is. You were working in politics, I guess, as part of the Green Party in Canada. That's correct, though, correct?
Yes. I had run as a candidate. I did not get into the House of Commons or anything, so I never was an active politician. But at that time, I really believed in all the principles and values of the Green Party. In fact, I was there at the founding convention in Ottawa in 1983 for the Green Party of Canada. And then in between years, I wasn't all that active. I wasn't, you know, organizing all through those years. But when I started to run in elections in 2004, yes, that was something I did very enthusiastically. Ran in several elections. But then it was when I was trying to educate the Green Party leader, giving her the benefit of the doubt about 9/11. I just thought, well, if I just explain it to her and show her the evidence, and I did really make a big effort. I sent her a lot of things by registered mail and really tried to educate her about that. But when it came right down to it, that was the line at which Elizabeth May, the leader of the Green Party of Canada, was not willing to go. And then I just started to figure out that no, that she is part of controlled opposition. I mean, the people who are in parliament are merely the puppets for the hidden government. The people who do control our affairs. I mean, if none of our members of parliament are able to talk about 9/11 and what really happened there, then that means that they are controlled by the very perpetrators of 9/11. And obviously, well, I mean, I think many, many people and probably many of your listeners do understand that there is this very deep connection with Israel and 9/11. Mm-hmm. And that was simply too much. I wasn't able to run in the by-election that came in, I believe it was the fall of 2015. And so I was basically... well, I wasn't quite formally kicked out then, but after my video, I mean, I had taken myself out of the party. I had done a formal, letter, which I know that they received, rescinding my own membership or out of the Green Party. And then after my video, Elizabeth May made a big public show of it and very public termination of my membership, which I had already done that. So that was a very public show of basically shunning Monica Schaefer because Monica Schaefer is now I've questioned the big religion of our time, which is the Holocaust. So that was unacceptable. And yeah, since then I've been out of that aspect of it. But the local happenings here in this little town are very interesting. They really have been, I mean, some people, it's not everybody, but some people who have been actively engaging in the process of shunning and ostracizing. And the weekly newspaper here has been very much at the center of that as well. The things they have published are just out of this world. I mean, if anybody is engaging in the act of defamation, it is them against me, and all the things that they, the people
well,
who are.
What, that's an interesting point there. So you're saying now that, okay, 2016. Take us back to 2016. Where did you become, I guess, known within? Where did your flag? How did you raise your flag and get noticed? I guess as being someone, as a person of interest to the Jewish community relative to your views? What is it that you were doing that got you on somebody's radar screen so that they would at least be watching you, so that if you made this mistake, quote unquote, like your video, that they would want to go after you? What were you doing?
Yeah, I guess I did get onto their radar before my Mom.
You can't fool me. I know something else was going on.
That's right. So back in 2014, I organized a speaker event here in Jasper, and I brought Christopher Bolin here. And, you know, in this little town of 5,000, I was able to organize this speaker event with Christopher Bolin, who has gone all around the United States now in recent years to speak about 9/11 and the Israeli connection to 9/11. And I mean, he backs it up with just endless evidence. There's no question. So that kind of got me on the radar. But with the town people, it wasn't anything yet until I did release that video, "Sorry Mom, I Was Wrong About the Holocaust." And it just went viral, actually. I mean, it spread like wildfire. And when I got back to Jasper, it was apparent to me that, I mean, people were accusing me of dividing the community. Everybody was arguing about it around their dinner tables.
Well, that's a good thing. It's called publicity, folks.
Oh, yeah. Big publicity. The latest thing that has happened, I mean, the FitzHugh, they've really ramped it up in recent weeks. And there's a bit of a reason for that, I believe, because in mid-February, I spoke with town council, or I made a presentation to town council again. There's some background here that I will need to explain, but it seemed like I was doing better in terms of my ability to live and work and be in this community. And that didn't, apparently the people who don't like my message, they didn't like that very much. And they really ramped up the hostilities since then. And the latest, the culmination is this letter that was published in the FitzHugh by a fellow who does not live here. He's not known to anybody that I have spoken to in town here. And he comes from North Vancouver, BC. His name is Paul Brook. And he has written before to the paper, and they've published his letter, another letter before. And it is very carefully crafted for the maximum damage at me. Every sentence in this letter, and I would like to read it, but I would like to build up to that or just set the stage for that. It takes about a minute and a half to read it,
okay,
if I may. But I'll just give a little bit of context for some of the things that happened directly. So when I came back to Jasper, gigs were canceled. The Canada Day performance I was supposed to do was canceled. It was a children's show, which I had done before. It was a voluntary thing as well. And they canceled it because of some threatened protests. They said somebody was going to be protesting, and so there might be violence. Now, who was threatening violence? I was not threatening violence. Somebody else might have been threatening violence, but I thought we had bylaw officers and police to take care of those kind of threats. I mean, if anybody just threatens a protest, does that mean that whatever activity was happening is get shut down? No, they take care of the protesters or whatever.
That's what the police are for. Do your job, guys.
Exactly. And then the next thing that happened was busking. Now, I don't know if everybody knows what that is. That's when you go and play music out on a sidewalk in a public place, you open your case, and passersby, they can either ignore you, or they might throw a coin or two into your music case if they appreciate the music. That's called busking.
I didn't know that. I talked about that going on in Spain recently. It's called busking.
Okay, so just slightly different pronunciation. Anyway, this is a recently sanctioned activity in Jasper. It didn't used to be permitted here, but it just started to be permitted last summer. And in fact, I had been one of the key people early on, like years ago, who had lobbied for this to be allowed in Jasper in this beautiful setting in the national park. It just seemed perfect. So finally, it was allowed. I go to get my license, and lo and behold, they say, no, due to your publicly proclaimed non-inclusive beliefs, we are not issuing you a busking license.
Well, this sounds like tyranny to me. This is just a tyrannical regime that essentially is stomping on your freedom of speech, isn't it?
Absolutely. And to put it into context, I have lived here quite a long time, about 35 years, most of my adult life. And during that time, I have played my violin all over this town and for all kinds of people. And as a volunteer, I might add, you know, for the seniors, for the children, at community dinners and fundraisers. I've always played when people have asked me to play at fundraisers. And I do this very willingly and happily. And I've never, I mean, they've always appreciated my music, but suddenly when it comes time now that I might have the opportunity to earn a few dollars with it, and now that I have these heretical views, suddenly I am persona non grata and they don't want me to do this. Now, So there was the busking story. Now, I'm also banned from the Royal Canadian Legion. And in this town, the Legion is not a sleepy, quiet place where a few veterans go. No, it's a real happening place with all kinds of music, concerts, passing musicians. Like, it's a venue. It's become a venue for activities here. It's social life. And so this is a fairly significant thing that they have banned me from there. And it was the president of the Legion, Ken Kuzminski, who just very early on did this. I doubt if he actually ran it by the board first. I do not know that. He is not talking to me. He has never actually sat down with me in a meeting. I've requested it, and he completely ignores me and just keeps flinging knives my way through, you know, letters in the paper that they publish and the continued prohibition of me setting foot in there. And it has.
I'm curious because when I hear the stories coming out of Canada, and I know that people up in Canada listen, so they're going to get this whether they like it or not. But the behavior of those in the ruling elite really, to me, reminds me of like 5-year-olds. These are not grown men, grown women that can actually handle adult life yet. This what you're describing to me is like a kid, a child, 5-6 years old, that just can't handle the fact that his little belief isn't accepted by everybody. Do you get that impression at times?
Oh, yes. I totally agree. It does seem like the maturity level is just so low. I mean, I am just trying to engage in intelligent conversation. I also don't go around every day and start to, you know, stop people in the street and just tell them, oh, you have to believe this. No, I don't do that. I go around being very normal, just engaging in normal activity. You know, you go get your groceries at the grocery store and you greet people in a friendly manner and say hello and talk about, you know, maybe the wildlife you've seen yesterday or just things that are quite ordinary. It's not like I'm going around with my blowhorn all the time trying to persuade people of my, you know, what I've learned about history. I'm just continuing living life very normally here, but the people who don't like what my message is about, you know, we've been lied to and there's these deceptions.
Are these, I'm just curious, are these people aware that the Jewish community has put out over 100 news articles about 6 million dead Jews or 6 million imperiled Jews going all the way back to the 1800s? Are they even aware of this? Do they have any intelligence? Are they just plain stupid people? Are they agenda-driven and stupid? I mean, what is their problem really up in Canada?
Yeah, I'm sure those are rhetorical questions. They haven't talked to me long enough to find out if they, you know, what their beliefs are on that. But it really has become a religion because it's a belief system. People actually say to me, look, I refuse to debate that issue with you. Even the people who say to me.
Yeah, I've heard that also. I refuse. Well, then basically, okay, close your box, but get out of positions of power where you get in everybody's way because you harm everybody. How many people can't enjoy your talent just as a musician because these idiots want to stand in your way?
That's right. And that meeting that I went and presented to town council, it was about the busking issue. So it was a pilot project. And so they wrapped up their you know, survey and had a report, the people who organized it, right? And so they went and it was on the agenda for the town. And so I got on the agenda and I gave a presentation, and everybody who was present, well, not everybody who was present, but most of the people present said that they really liked my presentation. I made a very clear message that, you know, the busking issue, it's completely separate from what my views are or my opinions are or my conclusions about any historical event are. And they agreed. I mean, even the mayor, he told me afterwards that, thank you very much, that was very well done. But obviously some of the people in the room did not like it, that it looked like I might be getting a busking license this summer. No decisions have been made.
For heaven forbid, people should be able to make a little bit of living if you don't accept Jewish ideologies. My goodness, right?
Exactly. And you see, the key point there was that the organizers of the busking program, they said in their presentation, which came just before mine, they said that the vetting process for determining who would get a busking license moving forward, like this summer, should be based on talent alone, like on musical talent alone.
So the reality is, it sounds like if we were to get litigious here, you have a case against them. We would just need to bring it and have the funding to do it. Because,
yeah, that's it.
No, I mean, you do. We're not litigious like the Jewish community. But if this is the cause, and you have obviously a huge resume behind you, then obviously you have a litigious matter here, which would be something that we could look into pursuing through the listener base funding these things. Question.
Yes.
Before we go into the break, just what are the details of this video that obviously went viral? Give us just a brief, like 1 or 2 minutes about this video directly. What exactly is like the content of the video that you're talking to? Mom, dear mom, I'm sorry about the Holocaust, or I was wrong about the Holocaust.
Yeah, thanks for asking that. I would like to tell the listeners what it's about in a nutshell. So I am apologizing to my parents, and particularly, you know, I call it Sorry Mom, I Was Wrong About the Holocaust, for having held them to account for the horrors of World War II. When I was a teenager, you know, we learned in school and in the media and everywhere around us, I mean, it was just everywhere, these messages about the evil Germans and all the terrible things that happened to the Jews in Germany during the World War. And of course, my parents, they came from Germany in the early 50s. They immigrated to Canada from Germany. So they were there. My mother was just a teenager during the war. But I just was so horrified by these so-called death camps, you know, the gas chambers, all these things that we were learning about in school, that I said, Mom, like, why didn't you and your friends and your relatives, you could have all gotten together and organized and done something to stop this. You could have done something to stop all these bad things from happening. That was way back then when I was a teenager. Now that I've learned the truth about what actually happened, or, you know, I mean, I keep learning. I'm sure there's lots more to learn. But basically, those things were lies. I just felt bad about that. But my parents are gone. They died a number of years ago, both of them. And I just felt bad about that. And I mentioned it to my brother, Alfred Schaefer. He lives in Germany. I mentioned that once on the phone. I said, geez, I wish I could apologize to Mom for those things that I said to her as a teenager. And he just said, well, yeah, that's really important. So when I went to visit him in Germany, we made this video together. I mean, it's me in it, but he produced it, helped me produce it. And basically, I'm making a public apology to their spirit, to my parents' spirit, for having said those things to them back then. That's the essence of the video. And that went out. And I did it in two languages. I speak German fluently, and I did an original in German as well. It's about 6.5 minutes. I guess I talked a little bit slower in that one, but it's essentially the same message. And it was instantly translated. Like in the first 4 days, it was translated into three languages, Swedish and French and Spanish, with subtitles. And so it just took off. People, it seems to have struck a chord. And I've heard from many, many people who it was the same for them. They were blaming their parents. And there is this real generation gap that has happened with people of German descent in my generation. You know, we kind of blamed our parents. And I think that was a very, just such a horrible thing that happened, this dislike of who they were and what they represented. You know, they're just these horrible monsters. And so it's such dissonance that we have in our heads.
Monica Schaefer, everybody, coming back for the second half of the hour. Monica Schaefer up in Canada. Sorry, Mom, I was wrong about the Holocaust. The Fetch Inside the Eye Live, back with more right after this. Welcome back. It's The Fetch Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. Joining us from Canada, Monica Schaefer, talented violinist, and the woman behind. Sorry, Mom, I was wrong about the Holocaust. Welcome back, Monica.
Thank you.
You know, I'm multitasking here. I've got my Twitter feed going. I've got the music bumpers going. I've got you going. I've got chat rooms. Join us in the chat room, everybody, InsideTheEyeLive.com. Click on the live chat button. It's humming and buzzing over there. Lots of intelligent conversation as we work our way through 3 hours of intelligent media for the politically aware. Before we went into the break, Monica, you were talking about how you did the video. Sorry, Mom, I was wrong about the Holocaust. It's really an apology to the spirit of the deceased, really, of not just your parents, I'm sure, but pretty much all the Germans, wasn't it?
Yes, thank you for putting it that way. That's exactly right. And I know that I touched a chord. Like I said, many people have told me they have similar experiences. They had the similar sentiments. So, you know, as more and more people are waking up now, and that really is happening, the explosive rate of awakening is happening right now, and I think that's why what puts the cabal into panic mode, and it makes it even more imperative for them to shut down people like myself. Like, I just go out there and cheerfully say my message and you know, without fear, and they don't like that very much. But something I really have come to understand is that there are people in every village, town, hamlet, everywhere that do understand the truth. But this is not readily apparent to the general public because most people do not speak publicly about it because they know very well that the consequences are high. And I mean, so for somebody, you know, like me, this is an example. They get even more frightened to speak publicly, but it also does give people the inspiration and energy to do speak publicly. They realize this, wow, the reaction against Monica Schaefer and all those other people who do speak publicly, and I know that I'm not alone in this, mm-hmm. That should tell us something right there. That should raise some flags for people. Now, what is it about what she's saying that is so threatening that they have to do this big reaction? It just does not make sense if you were only to think about, you know, logic or facts or evidence. It just makes absolutely no sense. there's a bit of a parallel with the book burnings that recently took place. I'm sure everybody listening here knows that Amazon.com very recently, I think it was March 6th to 7th, they just deleted, you know, many, many titles from their website or from, you know, the sales. And these were books that were putting into question the Holocaust myth of World War II. And so, you know, I like how Kevin Barrett puts it. This book burning is a ringing endorsement of those books, the contents of those books, because if they can't refute the evidence and the contents of those books, then they just have to burn them, right? And so the parallel with...
And people should be aware, Monica, that when the Allies, if you want to call them the Allies, went into Germany after the war had ended, they embarked on a massive book burning campaign that doesn't make it into the public record much, but they really tried to erase so much of the history of the German people vis-a-vis their books. This, of course, was long before the time of computers, and radio was barely getting out and television wasn't here yet. So they've been doing this for who knows how long. And relative to this situation, boy, they really went after the German people after World War II, and they still are going after them today, as we argue. I have a question now. Obviously, you've got the negative side of releasing this video, but there's always the positive side. Also, we've got the positives out there.
You bet. Yes. Oh, yes.
Now, let me give you in a situation. I was in Logan, I think Boston's Logan Airport. And I was flying somewhere and I'm in the bar having a beer. And this was when I was younger in the 90s. And I said something to somebody about Jewish control, Jewish this. And this guy, I remember he looked up to me and he was sitting next to me. He was listening. We were talking to each other as a couple of us. And you could see his eyes raise and he says, "Now that's refreshing. That is really refreshing." Do you get anything like this where people are saying, "Hey, that is really refreshing. I am so happy to see something like that."
Oh, yes. The positives are just tremendous. I think I'm just absolutely free and I'm very happy, actually. Even in spite of these negative things happening, I am happy. Like, I can just speak the truth as I see it. And many people have also contacted me and just thanked me for doing this and just give me the most positive messages of support and encouragement. And, you know, according to the agents of the enemy, oh, these are all haters. These are all people who are, you know, despicable haters. Yes. And it's so crazy.
Which is like the greatest insult you can give. Because first of all, look, you know, we're all adults here, buddy. You know, this is my attitude now. Look, we're adults here. You want to call me a hater, dude? Get out of my face because you're equally hating on me. So where is it that you're right and I'm wrong again? And don't we really need to get to that stage? We have a lot of people coming to like you, the mayor of your town or the people behind these decisions. And, hey, what are you doing? In other words, having people vocally in a democracy get up there and start supporting everybody.
Yeah, there's never actually been the opportunity for me to publicly present a case for why I have reached the conclusions I have reached. I mean, there's just, they've never allowed that opportunity. They've always shut that down.
Yeah, what I'm saying is we don't even need to bother with you presenting your case. We just need to say, hey, look, we already get the game, guys. You're shutting down dissent everywhere you sniff it. And we are at the stage now where we need to just start shoving back against this shutting down of dissent.
Yeah, and I think that's where the internet comes in. I mean, the internet is a big game changer, and we do have the means to communicate with a lot of people, and that's separate from the mainstream media or this, you know, the weekly newspaper here. So that's something that we have. It's a tool we have, and we do use it. So they don't like that.
Have you compiled a list of those in the public realm who are essentially taking this totalitarian mindset and seeking to impose it on you? That would include like the newspapers, the editors. Have you started to make lists so that information can get out so that people can start to work anonymously? Because that's how it works in the internet nowadays, Monica, is just get the information out so people have it so they can start to work on your behalf and you'll never even know it's happening.
I guess I don't really have a formal, you know, full list of the agents and perpetrators who are working actively against me, but I have written about it, and I do have a blog. I could tell you what that is. It's freespeechmonica.wordpress.com, and Free Speech Monica is all one word, and Monica is with a K, so that's important. Anyway, I do write about it. I'm not really prolific there. I don't write tons and tons, but you know, there are the locals, and then there are people from afar, like this guy Paul Brook, and I was mentioning his letter earlier. And I don't know if that's all right, if I can read that letter aloud, just to put it on the record.
Sure, put it out there. His name is Paul Brook. He's out of Vancouver.
And who knows if that's a real person or not.
I don't know. Of course, these cowards often do work behind the shadows and are afraid to show their faces.
Okay,
that's
here goes.
That's an internet talk, okay? If you know the trolling world of the internet, I'm just talking like a troll on the internet. this is what they accuse us of being when we... when we raise these issues, it's like, you're just an anonymous coward on the internet and you're afraid to show your face. And it's, of course, we're always the public ones. But yeah.
Actually, that's a formula. I mean, anything that they accuse us of, it's actually what they themselves do or are. Like if they accuse us of being haters, it's what they are doing. That, I mean, it's exactly 100% inverted. And that's just a reflection of how the world is being presented to us. It's most of the news in the mainstream media is pretty much 100% inverted. They do mix some truth in there once in a while just to confuse the issue. But
you know what I found? Sometimes, you know, they'll do something like the local dog show, you know, the puppy show, and they just seem to get that one right. But if it has any substance to it, forget it. They don't know what they're doing.
Yes, these little you know, trivia things and sort of, I don't know, what do you call that? Just the community stuff that, yeah, they might be just entertaining and that. And yeah, they get those things right. Anyway, here is the letter from Paul Brook from North Vancouver, BC. And remember, this town here where I live is a town of 5,000 nestled in the Rocky Mountains. It is far from North Vancouver, the big city. So the title, Living in Jasper is a Privilege, Not a Right.
Whoa, excuse me? That's how they started it? It's a privilege, not a right?
Correct.
I have a great time with that one.
Oh, yeah. And listen, every sentence in this letter is carefully crafted, some of it directed at me, you know, just that I'm the most terrible person, but also directed at this lovely community, the nice people who have been a little too nice, you know. So here I go. Dear editor, I just read your article in the March 23rd edition of The Fitzhugh, that's the newspaper name, The Fitzhugh, concerning Daniel Gallant and Monica Schaefer. I'm delighted to see Daniel Gallant's court challenge against Schaefer and congratulate the Fitzhugh for excellent and responsible reporting. Until recently, there has been an understandable tendency in Jasper to overlook or downplay the Schaefer story. The vast majority of Jasper residents are tolerant, peaceful, and responsible citizens who don't harbor and publicly promote radically hostile extremist viewpoints. Everyone is entitled to their own private beliefs and opinions, but not to shove them in other people's faces like Schaefer has done. Her carefully crafted image as, quote, just a peaceful little old lady who wants freedom of speech, close quote, simply doesn't accord with the known facts. Her public association with known extremists, anti-Semitic websites, and international neo-Nazi groups is evident to anyone who takes the time to look. Schaefer has drawn negative international attention to herself and the town of Jasper, tarnishing the image of a truly great community by her presence. She seems to relish her self-imposed status as a persecuted martyr of historical revisionism and the extremist alternate right. She doesn't seem to get the fact that living in Jasper is a privilege, not a right. Paul Brook, North Vancouver, BC.
Wow, that is straight out of Jew Speak 101. I mean, that's not even very sophisticated, quite frankly, relative to this show. We've been hearing stuff like that. But yeah, we get you. You know, they're trying to pass, by the way, in America. I don't know if you're aware of this, but there's something they're trying to pass now. And it fits right in with what this Paul Brook is. And it's called the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act to Fight Hate and Bigotry.
Yes, I am aware of that. It is extremely alarming because the United States still does have that First Amendment, which is so critically important. No. And it's, yeah, it's important to
and I hear so many Canadians tell me that, Fetch, please, you Americans cannot fall. We've already fallen, but exactly. We cannot lose America because America, in this case, is the last light out there when it comes to being able to speak about things. So please, Americans, work hard. Don't let these guys take you over.
That is exactly right. We are kind of riding on the coattails of the United States that still does have that amendment, the First Amendment. And, oh, I just lost my train of thought. I'm sorry. Oh, I know. I was just going to mention that we should understand that in Soviet, you know, the Soviet Union, they were passing exactly these kinds of laws, you know, almost 100 years ago and, you know, making anti-Semitism, whatever that means, illegal. And then the laws just got more and more draconian and people were executed and shot. I mean, we know that millions and millions and millions of Russians then were murdered, starved, tortured over the ensuing decades. And is this, you know, it's the same cabal that was behind that is kind of running the media, the governments, and running things here. We have to, it's an emergency. We really have to just do everything that we can to prevent this and to wake people up. I mean, their power lies in our collective, you know, fear and sort of silence and just cowering and whatnot. They don't like it if we lose our fear. I mean, that's an equation. There's a
yes,
good
that's actually why. Very true. That's one of their formulas is that our power lies in the fact that these people are afraid of us, you know, by our sheer sadism. They cower in the face of our sadism. Not that that's going to save you, but they count on that. You're part of, in my opinion, Monica, you're part of a trend that we see where they are picking out isolated individuals who have a little bit of notoriety, not massive, but some notoriety. You're not a massive figure as Paul Brooks tried, or Paul whatever tried to sell you as, but they're trying to pick you guys out like Arthur Topham.
Yeah, that's right. Arthur Topham, and I'm so glad that you brought up his name, and people will probably know that, you know, he recently was sentenced to basically to silence and for his website that he ran for a good number of years called radicalpress.com. And I mean, he was really doing the world a service in enlightening people of what was going on with the Jewish power and, you know, history and putting things right with that. But of course he's been so vilified for doing all that and the, you know, the whole justice system. It's really a travesty what has happened with that. But, you know, I mean, where does our power lie? I think our power lies in that we have the truth on our side and that many people are waking up to this. I mean, you cannot snuff out the truth forever. It's like a candle in a dark room. One candle will light up the whole room. You can't say that the room is still dark and that there's only this one little speck of light. No, it lights up the whole room. And that's how it is with the truth, that when the truth gets out, it lights it up. Like it's like the equivalent to light. You can't, the darkness just, it goes away. So that's kind of an analogy how we have to see it, and we have to take hope and inspiration from that. I think that sometimes when people feel that it's hopeless, that doesn't really bring us much. I think, you know, in the end, the light does come through. The truth does win out over the deception and lies.
Monica, I agree. You figure these guys controlled Russia and they lost it. So it's not like their system is infallible and indefeatable. I mean, they lost Russia. Come on, they lost Russia and they had it. It was theirs, you know, and they still lost it even after killing off tens of millions. What we want to do is not be in a situation where they kill tens of millions of us. That's the situation. Another one you played with, a talented musician, Alison Chablot, is also being set up as a test case on Silence and Dissent. Describe Alison Chablot for us. How did you enjoy playing with Alison Chablot?
I was so delighted to meet Alison Chablot, and we just got along so well and had a great time. We had a couple of days there where we had together and at a couple of events, and oh my goodness, what a lovely, lovely person Alison Chablot is. And yes, she is going through a very similar situation as I am. Slightly different, but so similar, you know, being a musician and putting out songs. Of course, she puts out songs with lyrics, and these lyrics are what's so taboo for the people who don't like this message of truth. And that was just such an honor and a privilege and to meet her and be able to get to play with her a little bit too, play the music with her.
You know, we say that you cannot, you know, influence people sometimes until you're tempered by steel, of which you're now going through that process yourself. People like us, we've gone through that already, and we've come out through the other side. Do you find now that this problem that you're being forced to deal with, because you didn't ask it for sure, do you find that it's starting to temper you a bit and starting to sharpen your mind about really what's going on relative to the negative, I kind of call it evil, Jewish society that wants to lord over the Western part of humanity?
I think what you're asking is if I'm sharpening.
Is there like a silver lining in the fact that you're having to go through all this?
Oh, yes, definitely. First of all, I'm just learning so much about the world and how it works. And also they're demonstrating to me by this reaction that, hey, I think that I do have truth on my side. Why would they pay me so much attention with all this hate coming at me if I was speaking nonsense? Like, it's like the laws. Why are there laws in so many countries, especially in Europe, that you are not even allowed to question the Holocaust? I mean, here the laws take a different shape. They are in the shape of hate speech laws.
And but anyway, with that, guess what? Hours with the Fetch go by so fast. We'll have to have you come back again, because it was a delight to have you.
Thank you so much, Dennis. I would love to come back. Thank you for having me on your show. It's wonderful. Yes.
It's the Fetch, everybody. That was Monica. Great to have you. All right, everybody, welcome back. It is The Fetch, Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. Hour number three on what has really proven to be a really fast show here, and I kind of knew it was going to be. So join us in the chat room, InsideTheEyeLive.com. That's InsideTheEyeLive.com. Click on the live chat button. That will get you in the door. It's humming. We've been well over 30 people in the chat room for quite some time now. Joining us, standing by, is Michael Tom Goodrich. He's the author of Hellstorm, The Death of Nazi Germany, 1944 to 1947. And joining him is Mr. Taylor McLean. He's born in Florida. He grew up in West Virginia, now lives somewhere in the South with two dogs and one cat and a daughter who is pursuing a dream of marrying an actor on the Game of Thrones, it says here. He graduated from West Virginia. That was a rich part of town, I'm sure. And he went on to Auburn University, which I kind of like the football team, quite honestly. Again, he's a Protestant by faith, Dubliner in his heart. That means he's Irish like some of us. And he says he's an unabashed admirer of Dennis Fetchio. So without further ado, Taylor, welcome to Inside the Eye Live.
Thank you, Fetch.
And Tom, Michael?
Howdy.
Good afternoon, guys. I think I got to turn this up here because I can barely hear you. I think it's on my side, guys. Well, first of all, welcome. Mike, how... We told you we were going to bring you back 100 days after Trump took office. Obviously, we are about 100 days into that. How are you? How's the Trump presidency going for you right now?
Let me preface that question with a brief comment. I felt as if I had dropped the ball on your Fetch, because quite honestly, in the last 2 months, I have done almost no reading on any subject, much less Trump. I hadn't bothered to even, I had just gotten killed off, you might say, politically. But that all changed, of course, a couple of days ago with, a new word was invented a couple of days ago, Trump. From now, for 1,000 years, that word will come to mean treason, treachery, deception, and lies. So I think you understand exactly where I'm coming from when I say those words. War criminal, yes, I agree with Frank. I listened to your program all 2 hours of it this morning. I agree with Frank, a caller earlier this morning. The U.S. government is a criminal organization, and Trump is its newest member. That's the only way I can look at it. Now, there may be some complexities involved in this, but I'm going at the most subtle and common approach with this thing. I think it was the greatest stab in the back, the greatest double cross in American history, in my opinion. Trump's sudden transition. 60 million of us voted for Trump, and today I can almost guarantee you 60 million of us would like to see him in jail for this stab in the back that he delivered to us. And that tells you a little bit of how outraged to this moment I am.
It was a criminal act, no doubt about that. Taylor, you're new to Inside the Eye Live. I know Mike recommended you. How did you come to know Inside the Eye Live?
Through Tom, or Mike, as you call him. I started listening to your shows, and I thought it curious where you broadcast from, and why you were coming from the Middle East, and why you stay there. But for whatever the reason, I thought your shows were very entertaining. You had some great guests, and you seem to be very, very knowledgeable about most every subject concerning every guest that you have on the show. So I think you're doing just excellent. You have an excellent product, and I'm just proud to be here.
That's cool.
And like Tom, I don't feel quite as emotional as Tom does, I'll have to say that, because I didn't get on the Trump train very early. I was more cautious, and I watched and I read and saw that many of the alt writers and intellectuals on that side of the fence were saying that they were going to support Trump, whereas in the prior two elections, they had pretty much sat it out. And so I said, well, there must be something good about Trump that they see that I'm not seeing yet. And I started looking into it. And so I started supporting Trump and had hopes. And so it was just a kind of a surprise, but pleasantly surprised when he won the presidential election. And so then I think we'd have to say that the comments that Tom and I would make on your show today would have been completely different if we'd been on there last week. They are completely different.
I agree.
I don't feel betrayed. I was just, as I was cautiously optimistic about Trump in the beginning, I think I was cautiously waiting for something to happen, or watching is probably the better word, during his first 100 days. And I think we're now, he took office on January 20th, if I recall. So it'd be 79 days, I guess, that he's been in office. But nonetheless,
I told myself to look up the exact number before I brought you guys on, too.
I think that I was talking with Tom yesterday, as a matter of fact, talking about how our conversations were so different, because I was listening to another podcast, and they had Kevin McDonald on. I'm sure you know Kevin McDonald. And
he's been here many
years. He was talking about how he was pleased that Trump had pretty much hit the ground running. He had instituted during his first several weeks the travel ban on certain Muslim countries. He came out a great advocate in support of the police. And the hiring of Steve Bannon, all were signs pointing in the right direction. And so I think that was pretty indicative of the way most people felt, or most people in the alternative right felt about Trump. And now, I mean, I have scanned, just scanning most of the news media on the alt-right side, and I can't find anybody that doesn't feel like Tom does. It's just amazing. And they don't think, what's really curious is that this is irredeemable. They don't think that Trump will ever come back, and he's going to be, from now on, a lame duck president. And that's pretty odd.
Now, us here, we're old. Gentlemen, we're all older, so I think a lot of us are a little bit more pragmatic than the younger guys. You know, in your 20s, 30s, we're probably a little bit more idealistic at that age. Now we're more pragmatic. But this attack yesterday, do you guys see, you know, I'm trying to see through, you know, the complexities of it all. The reality is we did nothing to that base, guys. We hit basically a repair hangar, and for all we know, that hangar had nothing in it. Do you think there just could be some type of false flag upon a false flag for Trump to buy some time? Or do you think this is just purely, it is a straight up act of war, but you think that this is just politics and there's something going on we don't see?
Let me rush in here real quick with this thought.
Sure.
Trump, from the very beginning, began doing things that the 60 million of us who voted for him questioned. For instance, even considering some creature like Mitt Romney for a position in his cabinet. Doing things like that would have caused all sorts of concern in his voters, and he must have known that. Now, that may be true. Maybe, okay, perhaps it isn't as I see it, as simple as I see it. In other words, perhaps there was some gamemanship going on with this recent attack on Syria by America. Maybe there's more to that. And yet, is he that stupid? Is he that dumb? Are his advisors that cruel and criminal that he might think that we could just get over this, that we will just dust off our shoulders? No. He has lost me forever.
Yeah, Mike, they got to know that this bullshit story about this gas attack is not going to survive. And for you to go launch an attack overnight over a story that you know is going to blow up in your face, it's like, come on, dude, we know you're a neophyte, but do you have to go out of your way to prove it so easily?
And, you know, of the platforms Trump came up with, numero uno for myself and millions more was the immigration, the so-called migrant invasion of America, putting a stop to it and kicking the ones out that have already gotten here. But right behind that, very, very close, was this concern, this fear that we were marching irrevocably to World War III, that there was no stopping to it, and his promise to have a new go at the Middle East and to stop this encroachment of World War III, that was number two. And now he's just blown that right out of the water with this. Now, perhaps he and Putin had some understanding that he would do this and they could do that and this. That's not going to cut it with us average voters out there. And I'm not, you know, Fetch, I have the greatest respect for you. You have a very good understanding, of course, of Middle East politics. And I think probably you should, considering where you've been living for a while. I don't. I'm an average American. This is the average American bitching right now. On my bike ride this morning, I noticed that the same area where I mentioned a couple of months ago in your program that the flags were popping up everywhere since Trump was elected, I noticed that they're missing now. They're missing. There's no more flags, just a couple. There's some brain-dead idiots out there who still put those things up. But most of the flags are down now. And if Trump thinks that he's going to keep the support by playing gamesmanship, by saturating an airbase in Syria with bombs and missiles, people like myself say, well, by God, I hope Trump informed Putin about all this, because if Putin gets the wrong idea, we're incinerated tomorrow.
Well, yeah, it'll be very difficult for at least American troops in the area. Taylor, do you see an issue with Trump having surrounded himself with really what appears to be nothing but a bunch of Jewish Israeli Likudniks? And although we knew he was in bed with them, is there concern within your circles, within your, you know, your immediate surroundings about how much Jewified this current administration is becoming?
Yeah, I have to say that I didn't think that was going to happen, but I let it go, and I think most people did, that when Jared Kushner stayed on as his kind of informal advisor. Well, it's his son-in-law, and so, you know, we kind of overlooked that. But then he hired, what's his name, Kahn, the guy from Goldman Sachs, on his staff. And that was, I think, the first telltale sign that this was not going to work out too well. But still, you had on his staff Bannon, and
he's
so
rumored to be on the way out in some circles. You know, New York Post is spreading this.
He was removed from the National Security Council, and then it came back. Well, that's not really true. He hasn't been fully removed. He still goes to the full meetings, but he's not acting in any kind of official capacity. But it's clear now that the military and the Jewish element have gotten control of Trump. And I think that it's hard to believe that Trump would do something as callous as this for purely political purposes in order to get the mainstream media off his back about collusion with Russians and the unmasking of certain people or his team by Obama's administration. And all of that just goes to the back burner by this one strike against Syria that makes no sense whatsoever, coming on the heels of our announcement that we were no longer looking for regime change in Syria, and that Assad had the Al-Qaeda and ISIS on the run and was for all purposes ready to come to the peace table to talk about a peaceful settlement of this with America and with Russia. And then, boom, this happens. I mean, it just makes no sense whatsoever. And, you know, this happened before in 2013, and that it was the same narrative that was put out then, that Assad had gassed his people. And it turned out to be, it never could prove it. Never.
And here's another issue, is that we, the Americans, with the Germans, the Russians, destroyed the entire chemical weapons capabilities of Syria from 2013 to 2016, when it was finally certified that it had 100% been destroyed. And now they're trying to float the story again. It's like, guys, you know we destroyed this capability. Why are you bringing it up at this stage? It's like, you guys are idiots at this stage. It's because we know it doesn't exist.
Hillary, you know, found out, said a couple of hours before the strike actually took place, before Trump gave the order, that she suggested airstrikes against Assad. So Hillary suggested it, and then two or three hours later, Trump does it. I don't know. Call me a conspiracy theorist, but this is just too odd.
You know, Taylor, you're bringing up this business about who Trump surrounds himself with. You know, throughout his entire campaign, that's all we heard was drain the swamp, drain the swamp, drain the swamp. And now we're finding out that Trump is the swamp. He surrounded himself with Jewish advisors, neocon Israeli first warmongers, the Democrat liberal Marxist consortium. He's paying attention to people like Hillary, paying attention to people like John McWharf of Arizona, of Lindsey Squat to Pete Graham. He's surrounded himself by all these creatures, these swamp creatures. And yet, time and time again, how many times did you hear audiences with the refrain, drain the swamp, drain the swamp, and louder and louder? And yet he turns right around, beginning, like I said, with Mitt Romney, trying to drag that clown in up until this very day. Now he's listening. He's not only listening to what they're doing, he's obeying what they're saying, these swamp creatures. And so, you know, you can't do that to too many people. We're unsophisticated. We're just voting.
Well, actually,
somebody,
I disagree with you. We are actually much more sophisticated than they realize, and it's just not going to work for them anymore.
Well, you're speaking for yourself. I'm pretty unsophisticated, quite honestly. I really speak at the elemental level that I'm pissed off. I'm pissed off by this lies. And I'll tell you what, I'm so pissed off, I will never, ever vote again. I thought there was some hope with this man. He was saying the right things. But I will never, ever be caught dead voting for anybody ever again. We're either going to get ourselves out of this or we're not. We're not going to vote in survival.
Bill Kristol, he's from, I think, American Enterprise Institute or the Standard, Washington Standard, one of these. Obviously, Bill Kristol is a big neocon out there. Yesterday, he tweeted out, "It's been bad for non-Jewish Americans. It's been great for Jews." So basically, we have one of the leaders of the Jewish community essentially saying, "Hey, look, you know, you non-Jews don't matter to us. Screw you."
Well, he's honest. Let's face it.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the same one that was on during a break during a televised debate, who made the statement to Charles Murray that it would be okay with him if immigrants, illegal or legal, replaced the blue collar working class person in America. And he didn't know that he was still mic'd up, and that got out. So that's the kind of guy that this neocon is. But, you know, going back to my point about Hillary suggesting airstrikes against Assad hours before Trump gave the order. Now, why did Hillary suggest that just hours before it went out? And you will never convince me that she didn't know that it was fixing to happen because somebody on Trump's staff leaked it to her so that she would look good. She would look prescient. She would look very presidential in making the call even before Trump did. So,
okay, on immigration, guys, let's go to immigration real quick. We hear a lot in the Middle East anyways about Trump and immigration. It's a big hot button over here. Has there been some successful movement, in your opinion, about immigration and trying to reverse the tide of mass immigration to the United States? Tom or Mike?
Like I said, I have to apologize. I've been very unstudious for the last couple of months. But I can say here in Florida, it seems like there are more Mexicans running around than less. I do hear things like they're not applying for food stamps and benefits anymore because they're afraid that trail will lead right to them and they'll be out of here. Now, I'm not real sure about this. I know that the wall has not begun yet. Correct me if I'm wrong. And I know it's being held up by a bunch of leftist type of judges who keep... Maybe I ought to get off of that. I know things can't happen overnight, but let me say this. We have an estimated 20 to 40 million illegal aliens running loose in this country. Trump's been in business now for a couple of months. I'd like to know how many Mexicans have been actually booted out. It seems like it's only in the hundreds. Now, if we're going to get rid of 20 to 40 million illegals in 4 years, that's all longer Trump's going to be president. He's going to have to start kicking out millions every month, not hundreds. So that's just simple mathematics. Taylor, I don't know what you know about this, a hell of a lot more than me, no doubt. But
all I know is what I've read, and what I read was good up to this point. And that I think there was some statistics put out that said there was a 57% reduction in the number of illegal immigrants that they could count coming across the border. That there had been more hirings of immigration border guards, and that the morale of the border guards and immigration officials was very good and up because they were being allowed to do their job. And but I don't know. I, at the same time, I'm reading for some curious reason that the landowners on the American side of where the wall would be built are slowly coming out and saying they don't want the wall, that they think it would be impossible to build on this particular terrain, or that it's going to be too expensive, et cetera, et cetera. So there's conflicting information coming through the mainstream media about the thing. So
yeah, and
hard to tell.
Yeah, and then a couple of days ago, 48 hours ago, Trump went against his campaign promise of finding solutions to the Middle East, not seeking regime change, not bombing back to the Stone Age every little country that disagreed with us in some way. So why not backtrack, lie about immigration now? Why not just let it go? I mean, he's
Well,
anything's possible.
For the record, Trump is deported 35,604 people
okay.
the first 2 months, compared to 35,255 last year. So it's barely above last year.
Oh, jeez.
So it's not like he's really doing much of anything. It's basically the wheel grinds at about this pace. So there's been no uptick whatsoever. So
yeah, that well, is, we got suckered again. That's.
You know, Tom, you're starting to sound like John Kaminsky on me, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I think one of the real keys here is what Steve Bannon does. If Bannon announces that he's leaving, and I would not be surprised because of what I've been reading about the conflicts between he and Jared Kushner, if Bannon says he's leaving, that's a sign that we can all take as proof positive that Trump has gone against everything that we voted for him for. Bannon's the only hope that we've got still. If we've got any hope, it's that Bannon stays there and catches his ear once again and say, look, guy, this is wrong. This was wrong. You can't be making statements about bombing Syria again, and which he did. And I'm sure Putin's already sent one warship into the area and has rescinded the agreement not to engage in airstrikes or air battles over Syrian territory. So Trump has got to keep his mouth shut, and hopefully Bannon will get to him and get around Kushner and get around the guy from Goldman Sachs and tell him, look, we're going to have to cool this thing off. We're just creating more heat in the Middle East. And, you know, the only people that are pleased about this are the Israelis. That's the only group that's pleased about this airstrike.
You know, it'd be very simple for Russia to put a stop to all of this. And all they would have to do is convince Assad to allow the Chinese in and bring in Chinese military personnel in the way of air force and air power to balance out, and then watch what happens. This would just completely disrupt the entire game over here. And not that I'm giving our enemies any advice, but this would completely disrupt the...
Fetch,
yeah.
I've got to ask you this. I got to play host and ask you a question. I do consider you an expert on this, exactly what we're talking about. Will you please tell me, in your heart of hearts, in your heart and soul, what really happened 48 hours ago? It was, as I see it, it was just a blundering bozo bombing Syria.
Well, there's two scenarios. I'm seeing two scenarios because I always want to see the duplicity of what's going on, because we know politics, there's a lot of duplicity in politics. One, yeah, you're right. This just bumbling moron who doesn't get it, who talks a big game about how I'm smart and I got a 160 IQ. And the second they parade these pictures, he just mumbles like, oh, I got to protect the children. Don't give us a break, dude. And then launches this attack like a moron. That's the one. The other is that there are some very deep state things going on whereby Trump is essentially out a lot of the fifth column elements here by all the praise and the singing and, oh, you're a great man now. Let them just come to the surface. We can all see who they are now publicly because, gee, they were just against Trump yesterday. And at the same time, you're giving Russia much more, let's say, incentives / reasons to bolster Syrian air defenses. That would be against the Israelis. For the most part, you've taken away now the agreement that allowed the Pentagon to talk to Moscow regarding flights and overflights and things inside of Syria. That means that now the Pentagon is going to be blind. So now Trump is essentially, because you know there's a war going on between the CIA and the Pentagon also inside of Syria. So now the Pentagon's blind. So now you can have Syrian forces going after American proxies, and America's not going to know about it because there is no agreement to announce this stuff in advance. So there's a lot of things being taken away from the Pentagon after this stupid move, and they achieved nothing. They were flying out of it yesterday, making more runs and sorties from that exact air base. So it's not like we did anything really to harm that base. That's the key here. We didn't hit the airfield. We didn't hit the runways. We didn't hit the parkways. We didn't hit where the operational aircraft were. We did nothing to yeah, we destroyed six aircraft, you know, but some of these may not have been even in a repairable condition anyways. Maybe they're being used mainly for spare parts. So all this money we spent, guys, we spent $50 million just in Tomahawks on this. That doesn't include all the intelligence and the planning and everything else that had to go into this. It had to have been pre-planned, everybody. It just didn't happen overnight. This was, as the Russian ministry said, it was pre-planned probably for weeks in advance. You had to get those two ships into position. How much did it cost us to get them there? You know what I mean? So this has been planned for probably a few months.
And then on the eve of it, the Pentagon called Russia at least 30 minutes to an hour before the actual strike and advised the Russians that it was coming. So that's why there was very little damage to the airfield. It's because most of the planes and most of the personnel, including all the Russians that were there, got out.
Well, so, they got out. They were just in areas that weren't targeted, would be my opinion.
Yeah.
So you guys are insinuating that this will redound to the good to all of us.
Yes.
Isn't that what you're really?
Yeah, basically, because what's happening now is we're strengthening the position of Russia and Iran and Hezbollah in Syria.
Well, good. I'm for that. But let me say again, this is the American presidency. He's there because of votes.
We have to watch. Mike, we have to watch now. If it escalates, then you know it's bad. If there's a big back down off of this, then you know, okay, play it cool. It's the Fetch, everybody. Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. Michael Goodrich and Taylor McLean joining us for the half hour. All right, welcome back, everybody. It's the Fetch inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. Coming to you from Amman, Jordan, where the date is April the 8th. I think that's right, 2017. I always get my dates mixed up. Joining us from Florida, Michael Tom Goodrich, author of Hellstorm, The Death of Nazi Germany, 1944 to 1947, and Taylor McLean out of, I believe, Virginia, something like that. Taylor, where are you? Taylor, where are you from? Or where are you residing?
In Bartow, Florida.
Florida also. So this is a Florida show. Florida and Amman. Gentlemen, welcome back. Going back into this issues in the United States, guys, what I see is more troubling, obviously, besides this criminal act. It was a criminal act at the end of the day, besides blowing $50 million that could have been used in America. Don't you guys have a problem, Mike? We'll start with you, of nepotism. Put it, Jared Kushner and Ivanka next to the president and essentially having this influence. Don't you guys have a problem with this type of behavior going on in this White House?
Yeah, I do, especially who this Kushner is, a Jew that's very well connected in Israel. That's just about the worst case scenario there. Let's just put it this way. If it was the... just your average Joe off the street and he thought his wife or his son or son-in-law was an asset to his administration, I'd still say no, because somewhere in this, you know, you're mixing family with politics. I just don't like it. It smells. But in this case, it's much, much worse, of course, because the Middle East, you cannot talk about the Middle East unless you talk about Israel. You cannot talk about American wars unless you talk about Israel, because that's why we're there to begin with, is Israel. And here he has an Israeli firster in his family as an advisor. You can do the rest. I mean, it's easy to figure out, in my opinion. Yep.
Yesterday, Twitter, for the record, it was trending in the United States. The hashtag #FireJaredKushner was trending as number one in the United States yesterday. It seems like it's fallen off or it's being blocked now, but that was trending. Taylor, how about you? How about the nepotism in the United States with Donald Trump?
I think it's for the same reasons that Tom just indicated. I think it is a problem. And, you know, you look back on further other presidencies, and it's been a problem. Look what Bill Clinton did when he won his health care act passed. He put Hillary in charge of that. And then when Jack Kennedy needed a new attorney general, he made his brother attorney general. And those were not good ideas. But now we've got a president who has his son-in-law, who's Jew, and his daughter, who is a converted Jew. Remember that. So we've got two Jews who have both ears of the presidency. But aside from that, let me pose one more. I'm not big on conspiracy theories, but let me pose another hypothetical that you've already posed one or two, rather, about what may have happened. Let me ask you about another one. I'm asking you, is it possible that given what happened in 2013 when there was another alleged chemical attack, I believe it was in Ghouta, is that the way you pronounce it?
Gauta, yeah.
Gauta. That there was never any proof of the government's responsibility, that is the Saudi government. And it was it appears likely that it was staged by the rebels to coincide with
this
the rival.
This is common knowledge in the Middle East. Yeah, it's a staged event.
So, you know, now we have a situation where Assad was winning the war against the rebels and is willing to come to the peace table to talk. And the United States is willing to not seek regime change in that area. And so who is more likely to have staged a chemical attack, Assad or the rebels? Who gets the most to gain?
Yeah, there's one other thing. The Russian Foreign Ministry and the Defense Department, their Defense Department is saying that they believe this may have some legitimacy, but they're saying, look, we got to investigate. But they believe that they may have actually hit a chemical weapons storage area of the rebels, and that's what caused some of this. But we know elements of it are staged because you can, like, see dead people, like, blinking their eyes and stupid stuff like that. So I think they acted so fast because they knew this story was going to implode, and they wanted to get the assault in before the story imploded again.
And you guys are bringing up a really good point here that's so obvious. Yes, this is one of the more clumsy false flags that I've ever witnessed.
It's one of
it is so clumsy and crude. And is it... Have these various sides got to the point where they can totally ignore us because they consider us so stupid that they can just...
Well, come on, 9/11 said that. So what do you want? I mean, if you guys can't figure out 9/11, which was much bigger, how are you going to get some fake gas attack in some godforsaken village in the middle of Syria?
So you think it's really that way then, Fetch, that they're basically ignoring or they consider us so stupid?
Yeah,
that,
basically. Yeah, they want the pretext. Here's the pretext. Okay, and then just go bomb. Yeah. There's not enough nationalists or patriots right now inside of the military able to stop it. But that's not to say that, for instance, there was 59 of these darn missiles launched. Only 23 had met their targets. Okay, did those... others that may have been targeting really critical infrastructure, were those sabotage? What happened to them? And as an American citizen, we blew basically $988,000 a missile, something like that. What happened to the 34 or so that didn't make it? Okay. Were those sabotaged? Was there deep? In other words, all this has to be factored in my opinion, because America is at war with itself right now. The civil war isn't between we the people. The civil war is between the intelligence agencies. Look, we know that the Jewish state is screwing us left and right. We know that. It's not like people don't know it. We do have our idiots in the intel world that don't get it. I've met many of them. They're just stupid. But come on, at some level, you got to know what's going on. And I think we're witnessing a fantastic, without getting like a gung-ho war here, we're witnessing an absolutely phenomenal insider war with the U.S. that we've never had before.
You know, I've got to, I still need to find an answer for this from you guys. He would be the only American president that did not have an eye on the voters, on the voting public, on the ones who put him in office, Trump, that is. You guys both seem to be giving him credit for pulling off a really cool move here.
We think that he probably took the best of the worst he could do, because this Jewish neocon bloc is so powerful, and they may actually have a hold on him, that he really didn't have a choice. He can't, because you, Tom or Mike, you and I both agree, he flipped like instantly. He came like off as a bumped fool. Oh, these children. It's like, dude, give us a break. You can't be that stupid, right? So something caused this guy to flip, because he was saying all the right things, and then you get some poor little sad picture. What? We're going to run our foreign policy off of sad pictures? What's this?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? What is this?
Yeah, and so how many sad pictures can we get him to look at and launch some more missile strikes at?
Yeah.
Any place in the Middle East or in North Africa?
Yeah.
We can look at sad pictures all day long.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I've got to tell you, this guy who was voted into office by roughly 60 million people, and the other 50 million voters who hate his guts to this day, no matter what he does. I'm talking about the Democrats, the leftists, the liberals. He's probably got the lowest rating of any American president in history then, right about now, about 10%, because we who voted him in, we're disgusted by this whole thing, this turnaround. And it's just beyond me that somebody would give this up so quickly. But you're saying he had no option. Isn't that what you're trying to tell me?
I don't think he had an option in this case. I think they were going to say, look, here's the pretext. You're going to do this thing. And if you don't, maybe there's something else going on. Again, Washington's very complex. We don't know all that. Obviously, we don't know. We're the plebes, you know. All we can do is use it as sport and entertainment to try to figure it out, so we can make some type of informed decision. It's not like we're going to get it from our press.
Well, if there's anything good that's going to come out of this, I think that it has to be that finally, you know, our eyes are open to what is happening to white American men and women, and that there is no hope in Washington. There is no hope in the swamp. There is no hope in any government that exists in this country today, that the only hope is for ourselves, and maybe it'll coalesce what's left of us into doing something, some kind of revolutionary act other than voting for, voting for Trump, a businessman who thought he was going to change everything or said he would. And we believed him. We'll never believe any other politician again. Never.
I agree. I totally agree with you. We thought we had somebody that had our best interests in mind. Instead, we've got another bloodthirsty monster like George Bush. And we've got a vastly greater liar than Bush, because at least you knew what Bush was going to do. But we get a disgusting bastard here who tells us one thing that does something else. And I got to tell you, I think I have my pulse on the average American. That's it. There's not going to be another. You're going to see a tremendous drop in voters in the next percentage of voters in the next election in 2020. They're not going to vote for Trump. And they're damn sure not going to vote for somebody, a clone-like person like Trump, who comes in and promises the same thing. That's it. It's over. We've learned a great lesson. I think we whites, the 60 million of us who voted, we've learned a great lesson. We've learned that we cannot vote in our survival. We vote in one man for our survival. He'll turn in under two or over a little over 2 months into a Trump. We must
see, Mike, I would caution you a little bit.
Okay. All right. Go ahead. Yes, please.
You a little bit, because
I'm searching for answers.
Because, again, our situation is not nearly as bad as the Soviet Union. Okay. We're not in that situation where they're already mass murdering tens of millions of us. They're slowly killing people off with vaccines and other ways. Okay, we'll admit that into the record here. But they're not they're not like able to corner our food stocks yet, and we're not losing hundreds, we're not losing whole towns to starvation. We're not in that situation yet. My feeling is that this opposition, it is such an evil that it's so hard to put our hands on it. It relies upon those of us with sense and ability to become dejected and paralyzed by our own feeling of being dejected. You know, we're just, we lose hope. And I would just caution people, look, you know, yeah, you learn your lessons, but try to, in other words, don't let yourself get into a situation where your brain shuts down due to being dejected. And if we start to spread too much of a negative vibe out there, you might shut down things that you really shouldn't. Not that we're taking responsibility for them, but in other words, there's a responsibility to try to keep the brain channels open once you take on the role of a public spokesperson for people, if that makes any sense to you.
My hope is that we will disabuse ourselves of the notion that one man can lead us to 100%. Survival.
You've got to get control of your local governments, your police forces, your CIA. You have to get control of all the instruments of state, and that should be the end game.
Yes, I do believe that this may end up being a positive when we realize that it's not going to happen through the electoral process, that we basically have to coalesce, come together, and be our own leaders, so to speak, a massive plastic plasma type of leadership where we all think basically about each other. Now, I'm getting off a little bit on this. I realize that, but this political process thing, it's just not going to work. And I think roughly 60 million people found this out a couple of nights ago. So no, I'm not saying for people to shut down. Trust me, Fetch, I won't. We just have to start looking at other options, other opportunities.
Okay, well, throw that out then. If you're going to make the state, throw it out. What other opportunities do you see other than a political process?
We actually have to start moving toward a white ethno state. We have to actually
start. So you're taking the Craig Johnson approach.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Now, I don't know where that's going to be. But then again, as a historian, I know that so many things open themselves up to you if you have enough people who believe. And we're, by the way, I want to say this while we're on the subject of folks. Monica, I listened to the program with Monica. She's great. And our best people are rising, and Monica is proof. There is no way our enemies can defeat us when we have Monica's on our side. She's a born leader. She's ours. And that's what I mean. Our best are rising right now. Our best thinkers, our doers, our shakers. And at some point, we are going to coalesce and come together. Those who don't, we're going to lose them. But then again, that's what happens. There's still a lot of territory in this world. I don't think there's anything we can do with this country. I think this is our parents and grandparents slept while the worst people, our worst enemies, took control of this country. I'm talking about the United States and Europe, by the way. And so we have to use other options now. I'm still not big on violence. I'll just stop right there. I'll say this. The animal kingdom, they do things too. They do it together because they, at one moment, they all come together in like thinking.
Yeah, like saying there was a gas attack when we all know it's a bullshit story.
Yeah, yeah, this is obvious stuff. By the way, I wanted to ask you a question. It's just off the top. My dad, this is kind of off the subject, my biological dad, he died before the computer world took control of our lives. He died before the Iron Curtain came down, and he died before 9/11 with all its horror and fascination. I would hate to die today and tomorrow peace was declared throughout the world. Aliens landed from another planet and threatened to destroy the entire world unless we made peace now with everybody. I would hate to die today, and that happens tomorrow. What would you like to see, Fetch, before you die? Or
listen, what is your greatest fear? Only crime is to allow to die with your children still born and living in delusion. You must eliminate the delusion.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's the biggest thing. Don't allow your children, don't die while your children are still living in delusion. Educate them because they're your next generation.
That's a scary thought when you consider the number of millennials out there.
Yes, but yeah, and just imagine if all of those were aware.
Yeah.
You know, how much better off we would be if we could get them aware. So it's incumbent upon us to not let them go. In other words, we should pass on some knowledge. We don't die while they're still in delusion. That's it. Peace has never been here on this planet, so I'm not going to go for something that big.
Just imagine, though, what if...
I'm not a dreamer. I'm not a John.
I get it.
You know?
Well, that's a point you've got there because no matter what happens with immigration, I mean, we all talk about building the wall and stopping illegal immigration. But, you know, as others have pointed out, even if all immigration were stopped today, legal and illegal, white people are going to be a minority in this country in another 20 years. And when you look at other areas on this planet where white people were once a majority and are now a minority, things are not working out real well for them.
Well, you know what's interesting? As far as Western nationalists, they need to start looking at the Polish, Hungarian, and Russian models. Poland and Russia both are undergoing excess births now. Hungary has basically solidified its borders and has really aggressive anti-border control officers working their country. And we need to get to this level equally. We need to look at these patterns, learn from what they're doing, integrate it, understand we don't have money like they do, meaning the Jewish side does. We have to find ways to get capital into our systems. These are obviously a lot of challenges that need to be done in the West, but somehow it has to be done. And someone like a Bannon with, you know, he was actually, I've listened to this guy. He's actually pretty a lucid guy. You know, he's a little bit too anti-Muslim for my taste. Not that I'm pro-Muslim, but he seems to be off tangent. He's more anti-Muslim when he should be focused on being anti-Jewish, if you know what I mean. He's misdirecting the energy to an external enemy when our real enemy is our Jewish population here in America. So... what can I say, guys? I mean, it was a hectic weekend with this Syrian thing, you know, but I'm saying patience because politics is very complicated.
Well, let me ask you guys one other question here. I've heard almost nothing from Putin's mouth. Have you guys heard anything?
No, it's been very quiet. They're not happy, but it's been very quiet. Gentlemen, thanks for coming. It's the Fetch, everyone inside the Eye Live. See you all next week.